the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hello there from Tucson. How are you all? Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast, which is brought to you by the Mighty Kraken, the best place to buy, sell, and trade Bitcoin. I am your host, Peter McCormack, and today I've got an interview with Jill Switzer from Texas Gun Sense and Lisa Ross from Lock Arms for Life, who tragically lost her son to a gun accident. But before that, I do have a message from my show sponsors. So first up is BlockFi. Yes, the amazing BlockFi, the future of Bitcoin and financial services. And next week, I've got a show coming up with Tuo de Misa discussing his article, The Bitcoin Reformation, where you will see exactly why companies like BlockFi are so important for the future of Bitcoin. They are building a suite of financial services with Bitcoin. They are helping mature the Bitcoin market. So whether you need a crypto loan for your Cybertruck, flamethrower, or trip to the moon, or just because you got to pay the man, BlockFi have got you covered. And if you want to earn interest on your Bitcoin, you can open up a Bitcoin interest account. I love getting my interest every month. And with those interest accounts, they have dropped all minimum deposits. They have removed the early withdrawal penalty, and you can choose to receive your interest in the currency of your choice. If you're interested in checking them out, I recommend you do your own research and then head over to BlockFi.com, which is BlockFi.com. And also, we have the mighty, mighty Kraken, the best place to buy, sell, and trade Bitcoin. So let's be clear on why Kraken is the best and consistently rated number one exchange. They are the most secure exchange for trading Bitcoin. No filthy hacker is going to be getting to your Bitcoin. And for you advanced traders out there, they have the best account management service you could ask for. They also have an unrivaled suite of trading products. They've got Kraken.com, the best place to buy, sell, and trade digital currencies with margin trading with up to 5x leverage. They've got futures and indices. They've got the Kraken OTC desk for large trades with private and personalized services. They've got CryptoWatch, where you can trade on multiple crypto exchanges from a single platform. And they also just released Kraken Pro, a beautiful mobile-first app so you can trade Kraken wherever you want. Kraken is killing it. So find out more, head over to Kraken.com or download the Kraken app, which is available for the iPhone and Android. Just search for Kraken Pro, which is K-R-A-K-E-N-P-R-O. Okay, onto the show. And so a couple of months ago, I did a show with Ragnar, who owns Guns of Bitcoin. And Ragnar is a passionate gun advocate and firm believer in his right as an American to own a gun. And I've kind of struggled with the gun side of things. You know, coming from the UK, we're not big firearms people. And, you know, maybe on Twitter I put out some controversial things, kind of anti-gun statements. And I saw the feedback. I saw people were kind of like, you don't understand. You're from the UK. You don't understand the Second Amendment. This is an attack on our freedom. So I was like, fuck it. I got in touch with Ragnar. I said, let's do a show. Let's talk about this. And you know what? Some of his arguments changed my mind on some things. But equally, I'm fully aware that guns are a polarizing topic, and they're a little alien for me coming from the UK, where only like the odd farmer owns a shotgun. And I've heard rational arguments from both sides, so I kind of put it in my bucket of the unsolvable problems, because there doesn't seem to be a middle ground. Either you are against freedom or you are risking unnecessary deaths. So since the interview with Ragnar, I've been keen to get another perspective on the debate, and I'm pretty aware of the responses that this show will get from gun advocates. Still, I believe that these are important issues that should be discussed, especially when there are so many seemingly unnecessary deaths at the hands of guns each year. So while I was out in Texas a couple of days ago, I sat down with Jill, the executive director at Texas Gun Sense, and Lisa from Lock Arms for Life, who also tragically lost her son in a handgun accident. We discussed their approach to gun safety and their stance on supporting the Second Amendment while advocating for more rigorous background checks and better education around safety, storing, and owning of a gun. And while we don't discuss Bitcoin in the show, I do feel it is a relevant topic due to the self-sovereign nature of Bitcoinism, because gun ownership is brought up so much. So yeah, sorry, no Bitcoin chat, plenty of gun chat. I hope you're okay with this and I hope you enjoy it. And as ever, look, if you've got any feedback, you can reach out to me. It's hello@whatbitcoindid.com. I'm more than willing to field any questions about this show. Okay, just to let you know, my trip is nearly done. I fly home on Sunday, and I do want to say a massive thanks to everyone I've met on this trip, everyone who's given me time for an interview. It's been another great trip. I've really enjoyed it. So yes, big love to you all. Next month, I'm going to be heading out to La BitConf in Uruguay and hopefully to Argentina for a few days. I've never been there. I want to go to Buenos Aires, try one of your tasty steaks. So yes, if you're out there and you want to hang out, do let me know. Anyway, have a great weekend, and hopefully I'll see you all soon. Hi, Lisa. Hi, Jill. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having us as well.
Thank you.
Okay, so, Lisa, I said I would explain the background to this. So, I'll give you the story of how we've got to the point the three of us are sitting here. I run a Bitcoin show. It's probably the most listened to Bitcoin show. I wouldn't say the best. Other people will say other shows are better. And the thing about Bitcoin is there's a lot of alignment between Bitcoins and libertarianism. So what I found myself coming across when I was coming to America a lot is a lot of people who consider themselves self-sovereign and think about guns and gun ownership as a right. And I come from the UK where we don't really have a big gun culture. I can only think of two mass shootings, which was one in Hungerford by Michael Ryan when I was a kid, and then the Dunblane shooting. There's been other smaller ones, but we don't certainly have it like the US. And what happened was, as I was seeing shootings on the news, I was going onto Twitter and going, this is ridiculous. Why have you got this liberal gun culture? And I had a lot of comeback at me. A lot of people saying, you don't understand what you're talking about. You don't understand America. So what I did is I kind of educated myself on it. And I've now shot guns, which, by the way, scared the living shit out of me. About I actually was blown away by how powerful they are, watching the bullet go from the gun to the end of the target. Yeah, yes. It blew my mind. Yeah. But I also did an interview, which you kindly listened to, which is great. Yeah. And I did that to understand a bit more from somebody who is pro-guns. Mm-hmm. It is only fair as a journalist now I hear the other side. I've written to people in Washington, no one's replied. And I was coming to Texas and I was like, I wonder if there's anyone in Texas. I texted Gil the other night and she replied. So that's the background. Thank you for coming on. I'm going to start with you, Lisa, because you obviously have a personal story here, which I don't know anything about.
Okay.
But Jill told me you have a personal story, so I think it's really important to hear that. So thank you for coming on. Do you mind telling me the story?
Yeah. So my story is that I lost my 23-year-old son to a gun tragedy. He was a college student. He worked for us part-time at a dealership that we had up in North Carolina.
Okay.
And he went
Where in North Carolina?
In a small town called Boone, North Carolina.
How far from Raleigh?
Probably about 3.5 hours from Raleigh. It's really about 2 hours north of Charlotte. So it's closer to Charlotte than it is to Raleigh.
That's where I shot my gun in North Carolina.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So that's why. Okay. So that night he was going to go see, it was really my husband's birthday. So my husband had flown in town because we owned a car dealership there, but we were living here in Texas. So he had flown in with a buddy of his to go, golfing on some of the golf courses because they're, down. You saw the Appalachian Mountains, so you know how beautiful they are.
Beautiful.
I mean, the Blue Ridge Parkway runs right through parts of Boone. I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous. So the guy he was with had never seen that part of the country, and so he wanted to take him on a, visit it and that kind of stuff. So they went, and that night they went to go have dinner with my son. And because my son was going to school there, working still for us, because we still own a car dealership in the town where this happened. And then afterwards, my son was going to go see, I don't know if you've ever heard of the hip-hop performer named Afro Man?
Of course, yeah, I've heard of Afro Man, because I want to get high.
Exactly. Yeah, you know who I'm talking about, yes.
So, I like a bit of hip-hop.
Yeah, exactly. So Afro Man was in town, so he was going to meet some friends over at a concert and go see that. They went over, saw the concert, and then afterwards, we're going to go over. They kind of met up as a group. And then I guess they decided to go over to a friend's house, which most 23-year-olds do, continue to go on with the party. And so they met over at another friend's house, and he had two firearms sitting on a coffee table. One of them was not loaded at all, but the other one was fully loaded with a bullet in the chamber. My son had been there maybe, I don't even know, a matter of seconds, minutes. It's just very, very short time. And someone handed him the firearm. He didn't know it was loaded. He also had been drinking that night. He grabbed the gun. I don't know if he was goofing around with it. If he wasn't, it pointed towards him, and it discharged, and it killed him.
Okay.
And so at the time, too, when we got the report that we said that my husband, again, was there, and so the sheriff came over to our business partner's home, which is where my husband was staying, and said, there's been a terrible accident. You need to come to the hospital. It's with your 23-year-old son, John. And so Randy got to the hospital, and by the time he had gotten there, John had already passed.
What was your son's name?
My son's name was John.
Okay.
When he was young, here in Texas, they knew him as Jonathan.
Okay.
But, he became John as he got to be older.
And what was he studying?
He was studying, to be honest with you, I know he was an English major, but I don't exactly even remember what exactly he was studying, to be honest with you.
Okay. And does he have siblings?
Yes. Yes, I have three boys. I have a middle-aged son, and then I have a youngest one that just ended up graduating from Boulder.
And how long ago did this happen?
In 2009. This year was my 10-year anniversary.
Wow. Okay, so that must have been tough.
Yeah, it was. It was really tough.
And how is everybody?
You know, it's when you say what's tough, every single day is still tough.
Of course, yes, I understand.
It's like it's not even like it's every day stays tough.
Every day's tough, but they're
Anniversaries, yes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
That's what you're asking me. Yes, the anniversaries. And sometimes it's not necessarily the day of the anniversary, but it's the days leading up to the anniversary.
Yeah.
Because you know that this is what's coming. And in the first few years, I didn't even leave my house. I mean, my friends probably wouldn't see me from probably about September till January, because it was literally the day he died, which was in September, and then it was his birthday in October, and then it was Thanksgiving, and then it was Christmas, and then it was like the new year, and I would be like, okay, I can breathe again because I can start over. I just went through the worst part right now, those 4 months.
I understand the anniversary thing. It's not the same situation, but I lost my mum a couple of years ago, and what actually happened originally, it was the same date of every month that I would signal it, and then her birthday, and then Mother's Day, and I went through exactly the same.
Yes.
And then I started to try and eliminate all those anniversaries, but I understand it's every day. I do get that. You never stop thinking about
it. But there's also little reminders that people don't realize. I mean, Mother's Day was another day that became very, very difficult for me, because, you know, we're celebrated. These are our children, and it's you're celebrating your kids. Your kids are celebrating you. And so that was another part that was really difficult to have. And then the first time I attended a wedding that was a boy getting married, and I saw the mother and son dance, that was another moment that I thought I will never have with my son. And so it's little things that sometimes crop up that you don't even realize until it happens.
And how is your husband, and how are his brothers?
You know, everybody, I mean, you know, life does go on, and we are going on, but there still will always be that hole in all of us that there's a person missing in our lives. I mean, there's a person missing in every picture I take. There's a person missing in my life forever, you know.
And is there any part of losing a child that I wouldn't think about? This, like, you know, you mentioned, you know, going to a wedding, how that's been painful. Is there anything else that makes life a bit more difficult that I wouldn't have thought about?
It depends on the time, a period, and where you are in the loss that makes a huge difference. Immediately afterwards, I remember being pulled over by a police officer for fog. My fog lights weren't on. And I'm looking at him thinking, can you not see? I mean, I just lost my child and you're pulling me over about fog lights? You know, it's just some things just seem so meaningless. Mm-hmm. And when you put it into perspective like that, or you walked into a grocery store and, you know, everybody's busy and doing things and you're like in this tremendous amount of pain and you're like, I just lost my son. I just lost my, and nobody can read what anybody else is going through at that moment.
Has it made you more compassionate to others in that you are aware that other people might be going through a shit day for some reason that you're not aware?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And especially, I would say probably I have a hard time still even with a lot of the gun tragedies that I read, I hear about, and the work that I do brings a lot of that back into my life, and it's just like a reminder. And sometimes it's even hard to face other survivors because of the fact that you know their pain and they know your pain, and it's hard knowing that you know this.
So the news must be a very difficult thing for you to watch, especially in the US, because gun deaths are so commonplace.
Yes.
And it must, every time must be a trigger. I guess, again, really poor analogy from my side, but I had a very difficult breakup over my wedding. My marriage only lasted 3 months. I can't watch weddings on TVs anymore, and just things like that. I'm imagining, does it even move over into pop culture in that if you were to see a film, are guns a trigger for you in films?
Sometimes. It just depends on if it's, you know, the violence.
Okay.
It depends on the type of death it may be. It does, but yes, it does. It plays over into every aspect of your life.
Okay. Well, I'm really sorry you went through this, and I'm hugely grateful that you would share this with me, because it's obviously something very personal and very painful. I am here to learn. If I ask any tough questions, trust me, I'm asking these for the point of learning and because I know who the audience for the show is. I definitely won't mean to be insensitive anyway.
Okay.
Okay, great.
Got it.
I just want to ask Jill a few questions now as well.
Okay.
Okay, so Jill, firstly, tell me about Texas Gun Sense, because I wrote to a number of Washington associations and no one replied, and I didn't imagine finding one in Texas, and here we are having this conversation. Oh, so, by the way, thank you for scheduling this, but tell me about Texas Gun Sense, who they are, how they came to be, and how you came to be involved with them.
Sure. It's hard to follow Lisa, and every time I'm in pain when I hear her story, so yeah. I can't even imagine going through that, and I have kids of my own, so thank Lisa. So Texas Gun Sense, we're a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization, and our mission is to advocate for common sense, evidence-based policies that reduce gun injuries and deaths. So that about says what we do. The organization was founded, some folks were involved when the Texas legislature was considering allowing guns on campus, university campuses. And so there were some folks, original folks, who worked against that. It did pass after three legislative sessions. And then after the Sandy Hook massacre, was the young students in the Connecticut, then the organization, that was in December. Let's see, this is our sixth anniversary. Well, we just had our sixth. Anyway, we started incorporated after the Sandy Hook murder as Texas Gun Sense. So we do a lot of policy. We spend a lot of time at the Texas legislature. We spend a lot of time with state agencies implementing policies. And then we have an educational component. We like to go out in the community, hand out information, educate folks. Lisa has this program, Lock Arms for Life, which I'm sure you'll ask her about. Mm-hmm. But that's another initiative that's fairly new to us, is just a laser focus on safe storage. And from Lisa's story, you can see that if those guns had been appropriately stored, ammunition separate from the firearm, locked away, things might have been different. And so she leads the gospel on safe storage.
And, you know, it's a hell of a state to run an association that's campaigning for better gun laws. You know, as somebody who comes from the UK, you know, I actually put a tweet out when I was on my way. I was like, yeehaw, Texas. And I could easily have put yeehaw, cowboy, bang, bang, because, you know, Texas is very different from the rest of America. I've traveled through the whole of the states. It's very different. People here, guns are a part of the culture. So it sounds like to me that neither of you are from a position of let's ban all guns. So can you explain to me what the policies are that you are driving for? Like, what is the sensible approach to guns that you are campaigning for?
Sure. And I'm glad you noticed, probably from our website too, we are not anti-gun.
No.
I say that repeatedly.
Well, it feels an unachievable goal as well.
In fact, my family owns firearms.
Okay.
So even more so, I had a gun tragedy, and then I have a son who hunts, collects, and has firearms in my family, and my husband, we have a firearm as well. So again, too, yes, it is a very polarizing conversation, but at the same time, like Jill was saying, on both sides of our board, we have people who own firearms and people who do not.
Okay, and one of the interesting things about that is because I'm from the UK, I don't want the laws changed in the UK to have more liberal gun laws. We have very tight gun laws, and I don't see any reason to change that at all. Coming to the US, spending a lot of time traveling, especially the place that changed me one of the most was up in Wyoming. I also don't see any way the US could become so tight on guns like the UK. Guns are definitely a part of US culture. Okay, so what are sensible gun laws? What are the facts? What is the evidence? What is it that you are looking to change?
For me, mine is safe storage, obviously,
okay.
And I think that's the low-hanging fruit, that's the easiest to obtain. There isn't a gun owner out there that doesn't believe that safety should be the number one rule. And so to me, it is, you would think that it would be the easiest thing to obtain, but it still is a difficult task to achieve.
And I've heard about cases, and I heard about one not too long ago. It might have been a year ago, about a four-year-old finding a gun, and it was her father's gun, and maybe it was a boy, and he shot his sister. And what I do know about the UK is I know two people with guns. They have to be kept in a locked cabinet, and these cabinets are inspected. Is this what you want here? Is this what you're talking about, safe storage?
Right now, the only thing that really what I want to do is I want to have a PSA, no penalties involved, but I just want the public to become aware of the fact of how important it is to make sure that they are storing their firearm safely. I think that the penalties that are there, I mean, it's a misdemeanor charge child under the age of 17. There is a misdemeanor charge. That is rarely enforced. The reason why that is rarely enforced is because they already feel there has been so much pain brought to the family members, that they don't enforce it at all. But the problem with that is that if we don't start enforcing at least the laws we have, then we're not sending a message to our community and our public that we're not accepting this any longer. We do drunk driving when there's not even a fatality. But it's even worse when there is a fatality involved. The penalty is worse. We don't do that with guns, and that needs to change.
Why is that? And how much do the NRA play a role in the reluctance for any form of change?
They play quite a bit role. And I'm an NRA member, too, as well. Okay. So I'm a gun owner. I really joined a lot of these organizations after my son's death because mm-hmm. I had a son who was not going to give up his firearms. And I had to come to grips with, because I'm going to tell you,
Did you go through that as a debate as a family?
Yes.
Okay, interesting.
Yes. In fact, I've got a forthcoming book that will be called At Close Range that the Texas University is going to be publishing for me. It should be out sometime in April or May, that kind of talks a lot about my journey. But yes, we had battles because, the minute my son died, I wanted every gun melted down. I mean, there's no question about it.
But you changed your opinion.
But I changed my opinion.
And is that time being a healer, or is that being practical about it, or why did you feel you changed?
I had lots of discussions with my middle son, who okay. is my gun collector and who hunts and does all that. And I came to the conclusion, I guess if you want to call it a conclusion, that I had lost a son to a gun tragedy, and I was not going to lose another son over disagreements mm-hmm. over okay. a gun culture.
Okay.
So I had to find a way that I could honor my son who died, but also honor my son who is alive.
Wow, you and were really in the middle of that.
Yeah, so I was really, really in the middle of it. And so I had to figure out, so I wanted to know as much as I could about both sides. And so I got involved in Moms Demand Action for a little while. I took the Evertown for Gun Safety Fellowship training. I'm actually a survivor trained in that. I joined the NRA. I started going to shooting ranges. I really wanted to understand both sides so that when I went to educate and talk to young adults about why they need to store their firearms, I knew both sides of the story. You know, I wasn't like just left out, just kind of like you do in your research on both sides.
Yeah, okay. So what are the barriers that you're coming up against? Because what you're saying to me now, it's very rational, responsible storage, okay? It's like, I can't understand the counter-argument to this. What is the counter-argument you're coming up against?
So I mentioned before, we're not anti-gun, we're pro-safety. That's what I say.
Okay.
You'll notice I don't talk about the Second Amendment mm-hmm. because you know what the Second Amendment is.
Yes, yes, of course,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And there are so many different interpretations. And so it's a hot button term. So I say we're pro-safety, and all the court cases have shown up to the Supreme Court of the United States that there are reasonable controls that can be put on whatever you interpret as the Second Amendment. So just like any of the amendments, really, there's room for making sensible decisions. So that's where we try to come in, is on the sensible decision side. And, you mentioned to me on the phone something about you wanted to get the other side. And I always kind of cringe when people say that because I'm like, who's anti-safety? You know, we should all be having the same conversation.
I didn't think this would be the starting point of the conversation. I thought the starting point of the conversation is we don't need AR-15s.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I thought, because for me, it's like if you're campaigning for gun sense,
right?
That, and there, I know there are associations out there who do want the banning of AR-15s, mm-hmm. but it's like, how do we take a step down? Well, do people really need automatic rifles and AR-15s and bump stocks? I think they got banned, didn't they, after Vegas? But
yeah, right.
do we need all this? And the argument that when I've put these to people who are pro-gun is that, well, I can still take a gun and shoot people. So I thought that would be the start of the conversation, not
well,
the safety.
You know, I brought with me our priorities. And okay. So our top priorities, safe storage always, mm-hmm. universal background checks, and extreme risk protection orders. And we have some other priorities.
What was that last one?
Extreme risk protection okay. orders, what some people call red flag laws.
Okay, yeah.
We do call for a federal ban on assault weapons. And the reason we say it that way is because there was a federal ban on assault weapons. You know, it seems that just makes so much sense. We did it once before on the federal level. And, of course, anything on the federal level, guns can grow across state lines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many things makes more sense to have it at the federal level if
so,
we can.
Okay, so you do want a national outlawing of assault rifles?
Yes.
Okay, so one of the interesting stories that so a lot of the people I talk to, the libertarians, they will talk about the Second Amendment rights and, you know, because you had guns, well, you were able to kick us out of the country. And if ever a tyrannical government should rise up, you need weapons to defend yourself. And I see both sides of that. I'm like, okay, I understand your point. You will need weapons to defend yourself against a tyrannical government. But will it happen? Like, I see both sides. But I actually remember a story, and I think it was in Nevada, of a militia who were protecting the walkway or the grazing rights mm-hmm. of a farm.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing the photos of the militia with their AR-15s. Mm-hmm. And actually, in some ways, they won. And because obviously the government's not going to go and have a shootout because it's dangerous and crazy. And I don't know if not having an AR-15 would have been as powerful, because those photos of the militia with AR-15 was pretty powerful. I'm not
sure.
saying that as a defense of it, but that's the argument I see from other people.
Yes. Intimidation is certainly a factor. Mm. And as you probably have found out, firearms are allowed in the Texas Capitol.
Is it open carry here?
You have to have a license to carry.
Okay.
And so some places you can only carry concealed. But yes, essentially. And in the Capitol, you can carry.
Okay.
So intimidation is a part of it. But it's also how many people can you kill? I mean, it's a sad equation
to
talk
about. That, yeah.
But, you know, how many people can you kill?
Well,
in the recent shooting, I thought about it in California.
Las Vegas, I thought, proved it. From the
right.
Mandalay Tower, he was
yes.
able to, I can't remember how, was it 50 or 60 were killed?
Right.
But
more
he was
than,
out.
I think 59. Somebody
yeah.
just died this week.
Oh, really?
From that, you know, from her complications from
I didn't
that
know.
Shooting.
But
yeah.
he was able to unload a significant amount of bullets in a very short amount of time.
Right. So let me tell you about our other priorities.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
universal background checks, I think that's pretty much self-explanatory.
Who do you not want to have a gun in those background checks? What is the red line for gun ownership?
Oh, there are prohibitors on the federal and state level. Things that come to mind is a felony conviction in your past, if you've been involuntarily committed to a psychiatric hospital
mm-hmm.
or found not guilty by reason of insanity. It's not a long laundry list, but it's a significant safety check
uh-huh.
on
no,
your
understand.
Background.
So felony is a crime where you've gone to prison, or is it any crime?
It's, well, felony versus misdemeanor
yeah,
are
what's
just
the difference?
Two.
What would class as a felony? I'm a long way from
murder,
okay.
armed
yeah.
robbery, breaking and entering.
Fraud? Huh? If you committed fraud, would that be a felony?
There's probably misdemeanor and felony level.
What I'm going with here is I'm trying to think of the counter arguments the listeners will put up. And one of them would be perhaps, I don't want, this isn't me being sexist, but perhaps a female who's been convicted of fraud. Following that, has been in a marriage, is now out of that marriage, and it was an abusive relationship. Moving home, wants to have a gun to protect herself, but would fail a background check. And that person is therefore in a discriminated position compared to other people. And that actually did come at me as an argument.
Well,
how do you respond to that?
You know, one thing,
and it could be a man, by the way, who's right. been abused.
Yes. Yeah. But one thing that might be interesting, another group I can point you to, is Texas Council on Family Violence. So they are the policy, the big person in the room for policy discussions around domestic violence. So they could give you the point by point, and I can send it to you later. But the data show that if there's a gun in the house, however it got there, a woman is more likely to die than if there's not a gun, when domestic violence is part of the equation.
But is that when they're a couple living together, as opposed to she's maybe left the home and wants to protect herself in her new home? Is it still the same?
That's a good question. I mean, it's by a huge factor. And it's the same with people having guns in their home if they're not responsible. You know, somebody breaking in and using the firearm against you is much more common than you being able to.
I've heard that as well.
Shoot the person who enters your home illegally.
So I'm not trying to be flippant with the questions, but the reason I'm asking the questions is that I, as an interviewer, pseudo journalist, I struggle to say journalist, but I put this in the bucket of almost impossible problems, in that there is a debate here, and there's always a counter argument for a point. Mm-hmm. And that's what I keep coming across. And it's like, how do you get to a point where you have a rational discussion and come to some rational conclusions? And this is one of those areas where I've tried to speak to as many people, get as big a grip, and I'm struggling, but as big a grip as I can on the subject, especially as an outsider from London. And it's very complicated.
It is extremely complicated.
Yeah.
For me, that's why, too, being the member of the NRA and also, working, I strict to safety, because I think it's something that every single person can agree upon. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, too, my focus is always on, I will probably pivot back to that, because that is where, first of all, that's what I know, that's what I feel comfortable with, and that's what I think that everybody can agree upon. And we've got to have a starting point. And if that's the starting point, then that's where we start.
And increased safety would lead to more lives saved.
Correct.
Therefore, it's a massive positive step.
Exactly.
Whereas if you're arguing over
AR-15s and you're arguing all this other stuff, let's start with the simplest thing we can start with, and let's go back. And the back step is, you know what? Everybody is for safety. Everybody wants that, so let's start there.
Because if we go back over the last 10 years, there's been a lot of shootings, to the point where I remember seeing Obama pretty much crying, but very emotional, in the White House saying, I'm here again. And he couldn't change anything. As far as I know, tell me if I'm wrong, but the only memorable change was the banning of the bump stocks.
That's the only thing
I remembered.
Me too.
And therefore, you could spend another 10, 15, 20 years arguing over the specifics, whereas you know you can make an
impact safety, yes.
Do you clash?
And you can educate as many, our police force can educate, and it's not something we have to penalize people with. All we have to do is get them to start changing the way their habits are. Don't leave the gun unsecured. Don't think that a child won't gain access to it. Don't hiding a gun is not securing a gun. We need to make sure that means that it's locked, unloaded, and separate from the ammunition. That is the safest way. If you're talking about for self-defense, then buy yourself a little safe that you put your gun inside, that you know how to access very, very quickly.
So I watched a Netflix series recently called Unbelievable. I don't know if you saw it, but part of the story, two of the people who worked there were the police. And I've never seen this done on film before, and it wasn't relevant to the story, but you saw them lock their guns away in a cabinet attached to the wall, like a safe. You saw that in it, and I was, maybe it has been and I've not seen it, but they made a point of showing it. Is this what most homes should have?
You know, the thing is, people want easy access, and that's the problem, is that we do have this fear that somebody's going to break into our home, and it's going to be an intruder that's going to attack us.
So this is the counter-argument.
And so, and that is the counter-argument. And so what I educate on is that then there are biometrical safes that are to your fingerprint that you can have a key fob that you swap over the top of that is small, compact. You can put it in your nightstand. You can bolt it down if you're concerned, because that's another. Theft is huge, and the first thing they're going to take are your firearms. And so secure it down, but make sure that you practice getting into that on a regular basis.
And is this a case of once you enter the home, you should put the gun away, or is it once you take it out of its holster, you should put it away?
Once you take it out of the holster, it's put away and secured.
So if you could sit in your house with it in your holster in your front room.
I mean, I do not recommend that.
Yeah.
But I'm just yes. So, and we do get a lot of counter stuff like that. And just, we have to tell from our personal what we feel is the safest thing. And again, pivoting back, this is the thing. Safety is the thing that, again, everybody can agree upon.
Because the situation you're worried about is when I'm about to go out for the day, get to my car, and I'm like, oh, where the bloody hell is my wallet or my phone? That could be a gun. Where did I put my gun down? And sometimes my kids, I'm like, where's my phone? And they'll find it.
Right.
You're worried about a child
gaining access. Yes.
And very quickly
hurting themselves or someone else.
Which has happened.
Which happens millions. It happens much more frequently than even our mass shootings.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those, I mean, mass shootings make up about 3%. Unintentional suicides make up, what, 30, maybe 40%?
So I'm glad that you started that, because one thing I always like to remind people is when we're talking about gun violence, we're talking about gun tragedies like Lisa's son or small children unintentionally getting shot. We're talking about suicide and homicide, and a lot of people go right to homicide. But in Texas, almost 60% of firearm deaths are suicides. And then another statistic that I just verified the other day that just blew me away is in Texas, veterans who die by suicide, 78% use a firearm.
Wow.
So can you imagine? I mean, like this, we could save some lives.
Some, but not all, because some are intentional. It's the difference between intentional and unintentional.
Sure, but the data show that that people pick a method and they don't usually go to a different method of, I mean, you can mm-hmm. get in the weeds on suicide prevention, but, you know, and talking about the homes, I've said before, the data don't support that you're safer with a firearm in your home. The data support you're not safer.
Okay.
Now, occasionally, I had my Texas Gun Center shirt on at the mall the other day, and this guy says to me, well, you know, but I have a gun, but we lock it away all the time. I said, good. And then he and his wife, he was talking about it, and he said, and we practice. At least once a month we go and practice. And I said, I love you. That's a responsible gun owner.
Right.
You know.
Are you a gun owner?
I'm not a gun owner. I have my license to carry. Mm-hmm. Lisa mentioned that our board's different approaches to gun violence. And one of our board members, Lewis, is a pistol instructor. He used to be an instructor for a police department. And so when I said, I'm going to get my license to carry, he said, oh, no, you're not, until I teach you what you really should know. So, I mean, I went to the range with him many, many times, and he made me go through all the motions, and then I got my license carry, which is a classroom and a test, and then you shoot, and you have to hit so many things. And that, you know, besides the fact that I want to talk about things that I've actually experienced, like you mentioned, you went shot. So that was the main reason, but I will say a secondary reason is you have to go through security when you go into our Capitol, but if you have a license to carry, you can go right in.
Okay.
And so I spend a lot of time at the Capitol, and so I can just go right in.
Next up, I talked to Jill and Lisa more about gun violence protection. But before that, I do have a message from my amazing sponsors. So Wire. Have you checked out Wire yet? Look, I know a bunch of you have. I caught up with Danny. He explained to me they've had a massive uplift in inquiries. So that is super cool. But let's keep crushing it for them until their sponsorship ends at the end of December. So why do you need to check out Wire? Well, they have been helping companies across the space with Bitcoin onboarding. Doesn't matter whether you're a solo developer or a massive team, if you want to simplify user onboarding, if you want to offer your users an easy and fast way to purchase Bitcoin, then pick up the phone to Wire. Get on their website. Do whatever, but get in touch with Wire. They've been crushing it since 2013. They focused on all the bullshit in terms of compliance, payments, and liquidity, so you can focus on building your core offering. Your idea could be the next killer app, so do not let the regulators kill it. You want to find out more? Reach out to Wire or create a developer account at sendwire.com, which is sendwyre.com. Also, let's talk about Dropbit, the best mobile wallet in the business. Dropbit has crushed it this year, and thousands upon thousands of you have been downloading it. Thank you. It really does help support the show that you guys are listening to the ads and checking out the sponsors. But you know what? They've crushed it because they've built such a fucking amazing app. I love Dropbit. I use it everywhere I go. I'm always sending and receiving Bitcoin with people, and now I'm always sending and receiving sats with people now as they've absolutely killed it with their Lightning implementation. And by the way, if your Lightning wallet isn't unlocked, hit me up on Twitter, send me a DM, I got you, I'll send you some sats. But what else have they done? Well, they now support Batch32 addresses. They also allow you to buy Bitcoin from within the app. And if you want to send Bitcoin to people, you don't just have to use an address. You don't just have to use a QR code. You can text Bitcoin or you can tweet Bitcoin with Dropbit. Honestly, they've killed it. If you haven't checked it out, what are you doing with your life? Come on, go and download Dropbit. It's available for the iPhone and Android. Just head over to dropbit.app, which is dropbit.app. And lastly, but definitely not least today, is my main man, Leon, in London. Let's support his conference, Advancing Bitcoin. I'm going to be the MC. I'm not getting paid for this ad. I just want Leon to crush it. I want this event to be sold out. It's in London on the 6th and 7th of Feb. I'm going to organize a dinner or meetup of some kind so we can all hang out, drink beer, and talk Bitcoin. He's crushed it with the speakers. He's got Andrew Polstra, who's twice been on my show, Andrew Chow, Jimmy Song, and Nicholas Dore. He's also got companies such as Blockstream, Chaincode Labs, Square Crypto, and Wasabi Wallet. I'm excited to be part of this, so check it out at advancingbitcoin.com if you want to go. And if you want a 10% discount, use the code Peter.
The time I did shoot guns, I've shot guns twice now. Well, actually, that's a lie, three times. I've shot a shotgun clay pigeon shooting in the UK, but that felt different. That was sport. I shot them in Vietnam recently with my children. I let them have a go. Mm. But the proper time I went to the range, I explain this to people. As an outsider coming to the US, it felt like going bowling. And the reason I say that, it was their separate lanes. Mm-hmm. Next to me was a couple. Then there was a guy on his own. Then three pals together. It was like going bowling, but it's not bowling. It was guns. And as I said to you, I was shocked by the power of them. You cannot understand the power of a gun till you shoot one. It's not like the TV. The TV doesn't give you any impression until that time you first shoot one. I remember the first time I was literally like, whoa. Mm-hmm. I was very shocked by it. How do you feel about children, at what age they should be taught about gun safety and have the ability to shoot guns? Do you think that's something that should be taught to them as children, or is this something that they should wait till they're an adult?
I don't know. I think it is up to a parent to decide when they should be educating, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But I know that I have spoken to seventh grade classes. And
seventh grade, how old is that, nine?
That's
eight?
Yeah, probably about 8 or 9 years old.
It's my daughter's age.
Yeah, yeah. Mainly it's been like a civics class.
Okay.
And they may be doing a study on Second Amendment rights, and I talk to them about safety as well. I've actually given to another one that I did at a Jewish community center that one of the young students had brought me in, and there were parents, and also probably there might have even been as young, I'm going to say seventh graders again. I don't think there were any sixth graders in the room, but I think they were mainly seventh. But with them as well, and their parents were there when I gave my presentation to them. And for them, I kind of gear it towards more, I talk to them about suicide more. And the reason why is because to share a good story, which is what I share with them, is that a lot of them are in chat rooms that are playing video games. And inside the video game chat rooms, they're with another group of students that are all their ages. And a real good friend of mine's son was in one of the rooms, and the boy was threatening to commit suicide to his chat room group. And a couple of the kids did not take him seriously, but my friend's son did take him seriously and went out into the other room where his parents were and said, I think this is serious. I mean, you know, there's a serious, he's going to do it. I'm just telling you. And even his name was, had suicide in his, you know, name. So it kind of even threw up another red flag. So they ended up calling the police and they ended up showing at his house. And he had tried to take too many pills and had tried to kill himself. So when I'm talking to the seventh graders, I tell them, you know, I hate that I even have to even do this, but it's that they have to be the first responders. Chances are somebody who is thinking about suicide may not go to the school counselor. They're probably not going to go to their parents. The person they're probably going to go to are they're going to be their friends. And I said, if you have that in the chat room like that, this is where they're going to be saying these kind of things. And we have to take everything right now so seriously.
That seems a very mature subject to be talking to 8-9-year-olds. I'm not even sure if my daughter is aware what suicide really is. Mm-hmm. I've never talked to her about it. It almost feels like we're losing their innocence and youth here with scary, mature subjects. I actually find, like, if you said to me they were 12, 13, I'd be okay, but...
Seventh and grade is maybe even to 12 or 13.
Oh, okay.
So, okay, yeah.
Because my daughter's in year 6 and she's 9, so I'm matching the numbers.
There you go. So, okay. You are closer in age than what we know. So 7th grade and 8th grade would be like a 13-year-old then, I guess.
But it's still a lot.
It still feels like it still even to me feels the same way when I even educate. At the same time, I don't, you know, knowledge is power.
Of course,
and so we have to share that knowledge with them so that they kind of get an understanding. I had all the parents in the room who were there afterwards came up to me afterwards and said, thank you so much for doing that. I'm so glad you shared that message. So it was very well embraced. So either they had that discussion had already taken place or those kids already knew.
I guess the original question was, you know, when do you start educating kids? I mean, just like educating them about anything, it's never too soon. And it is. The trick is, you know, what's your messaging around gun safety? And so I think there's a lot of people, a lot of adults who say, oh, my, you know, but I hide my guns. My kids don't know. And I can only tell you how many things my kids have found that they didn't know. So it's a caution to kids, and you don't have to tell it in a really scary way. But, you know, Lisa did a presentation when I was there, and it was high school students, like, so 16 to 18 range, years of age. And so Lisa was talking about safe storage, and this one young lady said, you know, my parents do not store their guns safely. What should I do? And Lisa had the exact right answer, which was, here's some of our materials. Go home and say to your parents, I learned about this today. You know, and can we review our policies and procedures at home? And then if your kids see you modeling when they go play somewhere and you say, my kid's allergic to peanut butter, will an adult be home? Do you have any guns in your home? You know.
You can't argue with that.
They see that that's something we have to be thinking about and taking caution.
And I'm assuming organizations like yours, there's a spectrum of them. Do you actually clash with other organizations because they expect you to be have stricter controls? You have that clash.
Oh, I'm shaking my head like, yes, I know what you mean. In some ways, I'd like to have that problem because in Texas, I'm talking about not nationally, we are the only Texas-based gun violence prevention organization.
Okay.
Now, there's some other organizations.
I was surprised there was one.
Right.
Well, yeah, I was.
And there's some other organizations like Moms Demand Action, which is you know, but they're based in New York and they have their national folks dictate their policy. There's other folks we work with. In fact, I lead a collaboration of organizations that have a real interest in gun safety. And it includes League of Women Voters. It includes Texas Council on Family Violence, which is the domestic violence folks. NAMI, National Association for Mental Illness. So there's the suicide obvious connection there. The Jewish Women's League, and some others that, you know, as far as boots on the ground at the Capitol, making policies statewide, we're pretty much it. The moms participate to the extent they can with direction from their national office, and they're terrific. But there are a number of national organizations, and you might go to other states and hear this organization's here and this, and we work with them all the time. People have written off Texas. And so those national organizations don't spend a lot of time with us.
Y'all different around here.
It's interesting because last session there was some that were showing some interest because we had two mass shootings, the Sutherland Springs Baptist Church shooting. That was in November of 2017.
I tend to remember them by the name.
Sutherland Springs is what.
No, I was thinking of the shooter, but I can't remember his name.
Well,
was he like 19-year-old?
No, he was older than that.
I'm thinking of a different one. There was another one in a church.
It's so hard to keep it straight.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, Santa Fe was the high school.
No, there was another church-based. It was a white chap who went to a, I think it was a predominantly black church.
In another state.
Yeah.
Yes. That was North Carolina or South Carolina?
This is the thing. There are so many incidents.
It's terrible.
And what it feels like is the things that you are campaigning for on better gun safety are great. It's going to make a big difference.
Right.
But this isn't really going to change the mass shootings unless by better gun safety, the child can't get access to the gun to go. But I kind of get the feeling if you've made the decision to commit a mass shooting, you probably are going to find a way of getting access to a gun. But you prevent a lot more of the accidental or maybe like the ones that come out of anger and passion as well, like the quick decisions. It feels like you're but what gets the news headlines is the mass shootings.
Correct. But that's what's the you said 3% is that.
But that's the debate.
But there's everybody matters or nobody matters.
Of course.
So we talk about all of them.
No, I agree.
But you're right, there is a different story that comes with each shooting.
And how do you feel that those incidents can be changed? Does this come down back to the national?
Well, I mean, and again, it's very sad that for all the mass shootings, they get a little jumbled. But, you know, the guy at the Sutherland Springs, mm-hmm. his Army domestic violence records weren't entered into the system, so he passed a background check. So that's a problem that we have, is timely entering of information that should prohibit a person from passing a background check. And then, of course, you don't have to pass a background check everywhere. The shooter recently in California, the student who ended up dying himself.
Shot two people dead, right?
Two dead and then he himself. Yeah. And then I think there were two others injured.
I remember that.
But so now they're exploring whether he used a ghost gun, which is assembling pieces of it. And that was a part of the Odessa shooter? You know, this is a terrible story, but my son told me when I first started this job, and I would get so mad at myself that I, you know, because these are real lives and real people, and I would get so mad at myself that I couldn't remember shooter, you know, resolution, like was he killed or whatever. And my son said, totally not joking, he was probably 16 at the time, he said, "You need flashcards." And I was like, is that the saddest comment?
Yeah.
You know, city, how many dead, what weapon used. But, you know, we can go through each. There was a good Dallas Morning News article that went through the shootings in Texas and what could have helped. We can't predict any particular situation.
Mm-hmm.
But every single mass shooting, there's a link that didn't work.
And also another thing that comes up is the wider societal problem of mental health. There is a correlation between shooters and mental health problems at times as well. Am I right in that or am I just imagining it?
No. I'm the right person to ask, actually, because for 10 years before I started this job, I was a mental health advocate.
Okay.
And I am a person with serious mental illness myself. So there are, you know, the data show us that people with mental illness are more likely to be victims of crime than the general population.
Okay.
And that they are less violent than the general population. Now, that's not to deny that there are some people with mental illness who do commit any kind of crimes, including gun crimes. And it's been unfortunate in Texas that that's always the way it goes. Oh, it's about mental illness. One thing, you know, I say to people that maybe jog something in their head is, for example, hate is not a mental illness. It's not in the DSM-5, the diagnostic manual. So we want to believe that everybody who does a horrific crime is, quote, crazy. But no, domestic violence is not a mental illness. And the equation that I give people is hate plus easy access to firearms is dangerous. domestic violence plus easy access. Suicidal ideation plus easy access, homicidal ideation plus easy access. What's the common factor there? It's easy, the easy access.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not to say we shouldn't work on hate. We shouldn't work on domestic violence. We shouldn't work on the underlying issues with suicide and homicide. But it's making mental illness the target is you're going to miss the point.
What do you say to the people who will say that statistically gun deaths are very, very small and anything can be a weapon? This is one of the arguments I heard. You should ban cars because you can get a car and drive at somebody, which actually happened in Charleston, right? Mm-hmm. You know, a car is a weapon. Therefore, if you're going to ban guns, then you should ban cars. By the way, I do find that a crappy argument, mm-hmm. but that it does come up.
Do you want to say
and
something?
And that you are well, on the point, but I think the point they get into is that the tighter gun regulations are punishing the majority because of a very small minority. And I think what they're just saying is there needs to be acceptance that a certain amount of people will be killed. What do you say to those people?
I don't think people say that explicitly.
Oh, they've said it to me.
Okay.
Yeah. No, in going down this rabbit hole, I've actually heard it a few times.
Okay. That because usually at the legislature, for example, they don't outright admit that. But if you follow their argument logically, that's what it's saying. Mm-hmm. You know, you need a license to get a driver's license. You don't need a license to get a gun in Texas. And so then if you think in terms of lethality, there have been incidences of other weapons being used, but to the weapon death ratio is much higher with firearms mm-hmm. than in other incidences generally. And, you know, we hear a lot of these arguments too, and you can't prevent people from being filled with hate and maybe getting a knife and killing somebody. That doesn't mean we shouldn't try. And our whole legal system is based on that. That's why we have a criminal justice system, is because people cross those lines and we take action against them. And I guess I lost track of your other question.
No, it's okay.
In there.
So, and the next thing I wanted to ask you about, there's a company here in Austin that I reached out to and tried to get an interview with, and sadly they rejected me, called Defense Distributed. Previously headed up by Cody Wilson, and then Paloma, I can't remember, her name took over, and then, you know, I reached out to them and they declined the opportunity to have an interview. So, printed guns seems to be an area that you would probably have your eye on and be observing. What do you make of that as an industry? Does this make your job harder, or does it not actually change anything? Because, well, I guess in terms of background checks, it helps avoid that. People who can print a gun can avoid a background check. But in terms of gun safety, it's the same things you're saying. So how do you feel about that growing industry?
So as you probably know from your research, is he had these plans. The federal government said, no, that's not safe. You mm-hmm. cannot share those plans. He appealed. And when the Trump administration decided they would drop the case, his appeal, that they would say, okay, you can do it. So then there was court action around that. There's been an injunction placed, but there was a gap of a few days where the plans went out, et cetera, et cetera. As far as our take on 3D guns, I will say again, my son, the first thing I thought was that the gifted and talented program at his school has a 3D printer, you know? And so, but policy-wise, I mean, they, you know, security systems don't ring on them. They don't have a serial number for the police to do checks as they do to follow guns through criminal adventures. My understanding is at this point today, they're not great guns. Like if you were a gun owner, gun shooter, I feel like by next month, right? I feel like by next month that could change. And I did read an article where somebody could successfully shoot 9 bullets. That can kill 9 people, mm-hmm. you know? So this is a serious issue. It's something that I wish the federal government would stay on top of, because, you know, then it's not just Texas fighting the battle. There were bills proposed this 2019 legislative session, too, to get at the issue in Texas. Of course, they didn't even get a hearing. But, you know, it's on the radar as it could be a significant problem and is already to some level.
Yeah, it's... I think it's, again, I've read some of the arguments, and you're like, oh, that's rational, but I think it's a dangerous, I think it's a slippery slope, and it's quite dangerous. Is there anything I've not asked you about that, that I should have covered in this? Because usually I like to do a lot of prep. I thought we may meet tomorrow and we've met today, so I've had to do a lot of this off the cuff. And I, you know, I think you can tell I know a bit about this subject, but there are holes in my knowledge. Is there anything I've not asked you that you wish I would?
It's a good and a bad thing that you're more knowledgeable than most people we talk to. Lisa agrees with me.
I take that as a compliment.
Yes, it is. And a sad statement about people who are making policy who don't know the data and don't know the...
I think that one of the things is I'm an outsider, so mm-hmm. this is so alien from mm-hmm. my world. You know, this is just so different from England that it's fascinating. But so I've thrown myself into it. But anyway, thank you.
Oh, and in some ways it helps to have an outside perspective. Mm. So, you know, like there are people on our board who never want to touch a gun, never have, don't intend to. And I think that's a different, you know, perspective than gun owners. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm in the middle, I'll say. But when I try to think of things, what are clearly will benefit everyone and just should make sense? One thing is research.
Okay.
You know, the federal government, it's kind of a detailed story, but years ago there was an amendment put on the budget that said essentially the national organizations cannot study what would lead to gun control or something like that. So in some ways, the agencies like the Centers for Disease Control, National Institute for Health, et cetera, vetoed themselves. There's so much to study, you know, that they have not been funding. And there are charts you can see where it's like per death, isn't that sad? Per death, you know, gun violence is way underfunded for research. And the reason I say everybody should be interested is, to me, if we can tailor gun interventions specifically to what we know is the pressure point that can significantly reduce, that's less restrictions on you and me and any gun owner if we know what works in certain communities. One of our recommendations is that we have these big, giant research universities. Let's do a study, a detailed study in Texas of what communities we're talking about, exactly what firearms we're always talking about, you know, et cetera, and design solutions around that research.
I understand that. What I would say is, well, two things. What I found in this, let's say, new career I've had for the last couple of years is that every argument, even fact-based, research-based argument, seems to draw up a counter-argument with other fact-based research counter-argument. But a bigger point is, it's not like the NRA haven't been presented with fact-based arguments before. It's nothing changes. So, like, I fully appreciate and understand what you're saying. I just look at it cynically and go, what is it? From my cold, dead hands. Like, it's just like, it just seems there's no movement for any form of discussion. So, yeah, I've not really got a point.
Right.
Yeah.
You have to stop it because one of our board members, our founding board member, she laughed because I had a New York Times interview after one of the mass shootings. And, you know, the reporter was kind of saying, oh, nothing's going to change, and you live in Texas, and there have been this horrible thing, and nothing changes, and how do you stand to do it was kind of the argument, you know, the question. And I said, you know, if you're in this line of work, you have to be optimistic.
Okay, good, yeah.
No. You know, you just have to be. And I think it's harder for Lisa, you know, because she's directly right here in her face with the difference. We did get a bill of funding passed this past session for $1 million safe storage campaign.
Good. Okay.
There was an excellent bill passed about diving deep into suicides. And it kind of what I explained just now for about research on gun violence. And I'll be there at the tables reminding them of statistics like 78% of veterans who die by suicide use a firearm. We have to talk about firearms. There's some movement around domestic violence. Mm-hmm. We've had a problem in Texas where not all the data that's prohibitive of getting a firearm is entered timely or not at all. So that we're doing some work around that. Texas law is, some say it's clear, I think it's clear, that Judges can order folks under a protective order or a domestic violence conviction to give up their, to relinquish their firearms. Mm-hmm. So there's movements around the edges, even if we can't go straight on to, you know, universal background checks, which I don't think is a hard thing, but straight on to something, is there are there is important movement that directly affect gun violence.
Well, that was a very good backslap you gave me that I deserved, and I'm glad you gave me it.
Mine is too, is it's going to be a cultural change that really starts from the people and then moves to the legislation. And so to me, that's what's like the most important. And starting that conversation again with safety is kind of the easiest thing that we can begin with. And then people, you know, it's kind of like we, for a long time, probably didn't have safe sex talks with our kids. We didn't talk to them about drinking and driving. We didn't talk to a lot of them about issues, STDs, things like that. And we have to start doing that now, and then that will bring about the change.
Okay.
And so it's going to have to maybe start with another generation, but that's why we're here educating the youth and the younger ones so that when they get to be at a certain point, maybe they can make that change happen.
Okay. Well, this has been really useful for me. It's not been the conversation I expected. Two things. I didn't know I was going to meet you, Lisa, and thank you so much for sharing your story with me. I can tell it's still painful for you because, if you don't mind me saying, I could see it in your eyes. I saw it entirely. I'm quite emotional myself, so you nearly triggered me. But thank you for sharing that because that's a really personal story. I thought we were going to be talking about banning guns, not about safety. And that does seem like a much more sensible approach. I apologize for any gaps in my knowledge. You know, there are some. I'm going to put this out on my Bitcoin show, even though we haven't talked about Bitcoin, because it's got a bigger audience. But I'm going to warn you, there will, I expect, some counter-arguments to come back. But I'm going to put it out on that show. But just before we finish,
it's kind of good when we get the counter because then we know what we know what to expect. It's so actually it's part of the information because then we know what everybody else is thinking and we can kind of think logically about it and how we're going to respond to that. So it's all good.
Okay. Well, I'm glad. And it's been useful for me, you know, throwing myself in both ends and learning about this. And it's definitely not the end of this. I do want to learn more. And I will probably go and speak to maybe a more extreme organization who do just want the outright banning of guns because I want to see their perspective as well. But just before we finish, because you know anyone listening to this might want to find out more information, can you tell them where they can find more information about your, do you call it a campaign or is it an actual association?
Mine is www.lockarmsforlife.com, and they can go there. They can also reach me through Texas Gun Sense, so because we are partnered together, so that's where you can find me.
Okay, and Gil?
And we're
Gil.
At...
Did I? Do you know what it is? I know a guy here in Texas called Gil.
Yes.
That's why, Gil Valentine. He'll be listening to this probably. Hi, Gil.
Often it works to my benefit if people are expecting a man. If they see GYL, it's GYL, by the way. So Texas Gun Sense is TXGUNSENSE.org. So TXGUNSENSE.org. And that will have my email address on there if you want to do that. We also are on Twitter and Facebook. The only time we ban people from Twitter or Facebook is, you know, curse words, threats. Mm-hmm. But we're happy to engage.
Cursing threats or just because they curse?
Well,
because I curse a lot. I've really held it in today.
I do too. I haven't cursed once today. Yes.
I usually swear a lot.
No, well, I mean, it's more like in a threatening way.
Yeah.
You know, that we'll just cut people off. Otherwise, we engage and we're happy to do so.
Well, Liz, I really appreciate it coming on. Mm-hmm. I might contact you in the future. I might want to follow up. You know, I might want to follow up with you as well, Lisa. But thank you so much for giving me your time. And yeah, good luck with everything you're doing.
Okay, so what did you think of that one? I am definitely interested in the feedback on this show for a couple of reasons. For, you know, firstly, we don't discuss Bitcoin. It's a topic which Bitcoiners are interested in, but we don't. But as a follow-up to the Ragnar show, it was interesting. So definitely looking forward to your feedback on that. And for me, look, it was cool to get a different perspective on gun ownership. And like with pro-gun advocates, Jill and Lisa raised rational points, which I found hard to disagree with. At the same time, I think I fairly challenged them with questions which came from the perspectives I gained from my interview with Ragnar. These polarizing topics are very difficult to deal with when you have people on both sides who have firmly opposing views. You know, how do you get to the point where you kind of keep everyone happy? And really, you can't. But, you know, I do hope that talking about things, it helps. I like the fact that Texas Gun Sense comes from a very common sense viewpoint, but I am keen to get somebody who's more anti-gun. And I know that will be controversial, but I really want to hear all sides of the debate. So hopefully that will happen in the future. I'm going to be trying to find somebody who's campaigning for quite strict gun controls. I think I want to hear all sides. I just want to get them all out there so I can get my own personal perspective on it all. But anyway, look, I hope you enjoyed this. If you haven't listened to my show with Ragnar, please do go and check that out. It might even be better to listen to that one before this one. And do get in touch. You know, I do want to listen to your feedback on this. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Also, I say this every show, I really do, but I'm so grateful to everyone who helps support the show. Whether you're a listener, you leave a review, whatever you do, it really, really does help with me expanding the reach of the show. If you are a keen listener and you haven't done anything yet and you do want to help support the show, please do head over to my website. It's whatbitcoindid.com. There's a support section there. It'll explain everything to you. And as I said in the intro, I'm off home on Sunday. It's been an amazing trip. Thank you so much to everyone who's hung out, who've spent time with me, who's given me interviews. I really appreciate all the help and really enjoyed meeting all of you. I will be heading out to Uruguay for La BitConf next month, and I will hopefully be going to Argentina as part of that trip. And I would love to meet some Bitcoiners there. So reach out if you want to organize a meetup. Okay, have a great weekend, and I will see you all soon.